Back with you on The Leader, Dieter Kurtenbach, until 10 p.m. This is KMBR Tonight, and one of our favorite guests on KMBR Tonight is Dalton Johnson of MVC Sports Bay Area. He joins us now on the UMA guest line to talk all things Bay Area sports. Funny how that works. Dalton, how you doing? How was your Thanksgiving?
Not bad, yeah. How about you, actually?
It was good. You know, the family came in from all around the country, which was super enjoyable. Obviously, we did that last year, and it was super stressful, so it was nice to be able to do it this year without that inherent stress of, like, are we bad people? Smoked a turkey. My wife made some incredible sides. We were able to deal with all the neuroses of the Kurtenbach clan, so par for the course. So I hope you got the same, maybe with a little bit less family drama, or all the family drama. At this point, I craved it. So let's talk about some of these teams that have been playing while we were all frolicking with our families and eating turkey. And let's start with the 49ers. We saw what happened to the Seattle Seahawks last night in Washington, but I'm a firm believer that division games are a different beast, and especially when you are going up into that fortress that is whatever the hell they're calling the stadium in Seattle and meeting the 12th man up there. Are you buying what the 49ers are selling right now, or do you still have some skepticism about this team, even heading into a game against an opponent that they are a road favorite against?
Yeah, I think I can buy some stock, but also feel at the same time, like, isn't this the perfect game for Russell Wilson to actually be Russell Wilson and for the Seahawks to be a little bit closer to who we thought they were going to be in Seattle? So as far as being, you know, kind of just penciling in a W right now, I don't see how you could do that. I think that you have to feel obviously more confident about this Niners team and feel better about them with what they've shown in recent weeks, because obviously just a few weeks ago it felt like the season was dead in the waters, obviously, and it changed this quickly. But as far as for a game in Seattle, still against Russell Wilson, no matter what this Seahawks team has been this year, you got to still be on your toes a little bit, at least.
What did you make of the 49ers contest, or I'm sorry, the Seattle Seahawks contest against the Washington football team on Monday Night Football? I'll ask you about the 49ers contest on Sunday against the Vikings in a moment. What did you make of Seattle's performance? Because it was, at least in my eyes, exceptionally underwhelming, and yet had all of the classic Seattle Seahawks voodoo that you come to expect from a Russell Wilson-led team.
Yeah, I guess if you're DK Metcalf, you're still wondering, you know, where's the ball right now, you know? And that's something where, again, you're looking at the Niners and you're going to go, okay, you know, he didn't have any targets. It wasn't a great game by them as far as that goes. And it's been obviously a down season. But then you also go, okay, well, the Niners secondary and DK Metcalf and Russell Wilson, and that's a scary sight. So you have to obviously figure that into it. If it's me, I mean, again, I think that you're going to look at a quote-unquote sports cliche revenge game right now. I mean, he has to be hungry right now. And same with Russell Wilson, who obviously is back from injury sooner than expected. But that matchup with DK, just it has to terrify you a little bit. I mean, come on, it's DK Metcalf.
Of course. And what did we learn, in your estimation, from the 49ers' win over the Vikings? That was a weird game too, man. There was some deep-down funkiness in that contest. The Vikings seem to have that going on in spades this year, getting a little bit of Seattle Seahawks devil magic going on. What did you make of the 49ers holding on to win that game on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, certainly a weird game to say the least, but I think that kind of we can take from it is that the Niners can win those weird games. You know, if that makes sense, you know, and you know, you're gonna have to be able to come away with some of those wins where it starts to feel almost inevitable as it creeps closer and closer, and as the time ticks away, like, okay, how are they gonna blow this one? You know, how are they gonna see the wheels unravel a little bit? And even at the times when, you know, the wheels would get loose, it still stayed on the car, you know what I mean? So
Right. You're
going to have to get those wins. And I think that is a positive sign where when not everything's clicking perfectly, but you're still being able to kind of grind out those wins. And, you know, the Vikings are such a kind of a roll the dice kind of team right now.
Right.
But, you know, we know how important it was. Obviously, it's still early, but playoff-wise. But I just think it's important to win a funky game in general.
Right. Well, they had blown out their prior two opponents, and it'd be nice to think that is just going to be the norm around these parts, but that's not how a parity-driven NFL works. So, and I'm glad you brought up the playoff aspect of it. I mean, unless they really screw it up from this point on. And do not discount the possibility of that, given how poor we've seen this team play this year. Three-game winning streak aside, they did lose four in a row at one point this year, and five out of six. Like, they should be in. It's kind of hard to see them not making it if they're just competent. They don't even have to be good. Just competent from here on out. That tiebreaker with the Vikings looms exceptionally large. I don't know if we recognize that in the moment, but I'm really glad you brought it up, because as we've gotten a little bit more separate from that game, it just seems as if this is a contest that when we get through Week 18, still weird to say, we get through Week 18, we're going to look back and say, man, that game over the Vikings was absolutely huge. Do you see it the same way?
Yeah, 1,000%, because, we kind of talking about this weird Seahawks game and this kind of, okay, is Russell Wilson going to be Russell Wilson and are the Seahawks going to be kind of who we thought they were? But then after that, I mean, you have games against the Falcons on the schedule, the Texans, the Titans, who are not the Titans anymore without Derrick Henry.
What were the Titans, by the way? Can we just acknowledge that, like, they were the best team in the NFL, and now they're garbage, and the Bengals might be the best team in the NFL. They come up in Week 14. Like, there's no good teams. Yeah. Who's a good team? Are the Packers the best team in the NFL? Because the Packers don't inspire me to take up football once again. Sorry to get off subject here, but, like, do you see any really good teams, like a clear Super Bowl favorite in the entire league right now?
Not at all. And, I mean, even the QB play just in general has just been underwhelming. I mean, there's no clear-cut, oh, my God, this guy has to be the MVP, or, wow, this guy really took the leap forward. You know, I mean, sure, we saw it a little bit early on with Kyler Murray, and the Cardinals were rolling, and then he gets hurt, and things kind of obviously change a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, just like I'm saying, the QBs in general, with guys like, you know, Mahomes having these kind of weird down seasons, and then just the teams overall, there's no clear-cut good team, which makes things fun and interesting when you're going to look at playoff implications and things like that.
Yes.
But also, like, all right, like, I want to see some really good football, and we're kind of missing that right now. It's weird.
Well, some team will certainly
– weird feeling.
I agree with you 100%. Some team will certainly make a run here in the final third of the season, and perhaps it's the 49ers, but you're going to have to forgive my skepticism here. Jimmy Garoppolo's the quarterback of this team. I'm not anchored, right? I can admit that Jimmy has played significantly better, been really rock solid, starter caliber stuff. He was better than Kirk Cousins, and Kirk Cousins is usually the dividing line between, you know, sort of good and great. He's never going to be great, but he's certainly not bad. And Jimmy didn't line up under a guard, so therefore he wins in the battle of Kirk Cousins versus Jimmy Garoppolo. He's been good, but this is a one-trick pony offense right now, and the pony might have been Deebo Samuel because of the mismatches that he was able to provide, and Jimmy with just throwing slants over the middle. It seems as if the remainder of this season rests on Jimmy having two or three really good put-the-team-on-his-shoulders games. And maybe he's got it. Maybe it's New Orleans again. Maybe it's Arizona on Halloween 2019. Maybe it's Week 17 against Seattle. Those were the three games where he did it in that special year. But, man, I don't think it's going to happen. What have you made of Jimmy as of late? And are you buying stock in the Jimmy Garoppolo experience?
Yeah, right when you started bringing up Jimmy, I'm happy that you kind of brought up Deebo Samuel as well, because, you know, this week it's going to be a lot more like a three-legged dog. You know, I mean, you're losing a pretty significant leg of the offense right there. And you know, even in games where he might have one single catch, he changes the defense and the offense so much as far as how you're going to have to game plan for a Deebo Samuel. And the same thing goes with Jimmy Garoppolo. And all of a sudden, it's like the Vikings early on are, okay, we can leave someone in the middle of the field because they're going to throw slant, 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 and eventually he's going to throw a high ball, and it works. You know, and that's the thing. We obviously have to give credit when credit's due, and he's played so much better. There's no doubt about that. And his efficiency has been key. His accuracy has been very good for the most part. Mm-hmm. But as far as taking a team over and taking an offense over and kind of saying, climb on my back, let's go, I just don't think he's the quarterback for that. And, yeah, he's shown it in flashes in the past. And luckily there might be some of these games on the schedule with a Texans team a Falcons team that could help with those kind of games and, you know, and give him the leeway to take maybe a few more chances.
Right.
But as far as just you know, being that guy, he's just not that guy. And again, he's been so much better, and it's understandable why Kyle's done with him right now, because he's been so much better. But I still think it's going to be a whole lot of Elijah Mitchell and finding other ways to, whether it's a Brandon Ayuk getting some carries this week, whether it's more Kyle Juszczyk, who knows, you know. But I don't think it's going to be, okay, time to put Jimmy in the shotgun and say, throw the ball 38, 39 times by any means.
That's a good way to have Kyle get an aneurysm. That doesn't seem good for his emotional health.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
We're talking to Dalton Johnson, NBC Sports Bay Area. He does it all over there, and he's one of our favorites here on KNBR tonight. I like the idea of Brandon Ayuk going into the backfield a little bit, but it's a little bit of, and you got to forgive the term here, a suicide mission for even Debo, who is as physical a wide receiver as there is in the league, right? Like, he doesn't qualify even as a wide receiver despite having 1,000 receiving yards. He's an offensive weapon, and this is what we saw from him back when he was at South Carolina. Just put the ball in his hands however you could, and he was going to make a play. But the Niners tried to do this same thing last year with Debo Samuel in the Patriots game, and it worked, and it kind of saved their season at that time. And the season didn't last that much longer, but they made it to December with implausible playoff goals when it all was said and done. Thank goodness that the NFL is rewarding mediocrity with this 7th playoff spot and keeping teams that have no business having hope in the picture. But he got injured last year doing this as well. Now you have this groin injury, and it's good news that it's not, you know, terrible, and it's not immediately ruled him out for the rest of the season. But a groin injury, Debo Samuel, even if he comes back in a week or two, that's just something that seems like it's going to be an issue in a way, shape, just something that you're constantly holding your breath about for the entire rest of the season. And for a player, as you noted, and I've spoken about at length, is so integral to the 49ers finding offensive success. Like, their offense sucked, and then Debo Samuel started getting the ball all the time, and then it was good. For him to just sort of be a question mark, and I really do think this, a question mark for the remainder of the season, that's going to be really tough. Is it possible to do what you said has to be done? Like, those are two separate conversations. I couldn't agree with you more in terms of who needs to step up, who can step up. But is it even possible for the 49ers to make do without Debo, or without being able to use Debo the way that they have used him over the last couple of weeks?
I mean, they haven't shown us that they can. So until they do, I don't see how we can say that it is possible. And something like, I think you brought up a good point too, as far as a groin injury. I know it might be 1 or 2 weeks, but a groin injury, all of a sudden, it's not going to, you're going to run some cream on it to 100%. But that's not how it works. You know, I mean, this is
any
that
any snap could be the last one with a groin injury. That is just an injury that is constantly on the brink.
1,000%. And someone that plays that physical, that downhill, like a Debo Samuel, that's a scary sight to think about, you know. And that's why, and that's the problem with not having a quarterback, that you can say things aren't right now. We need you to be the guy. We need you to play a little backyard football right now and get it done, you know. And that's just not who Jimmy Garoppolo is or is going to be. We know that. Kyle Shanahan can't change that. He's not going to be changed right now. And that's why, you know, I think just bringing guys up like Brandon Ayuk, as far as just finding ways to create creative ways to get him the ball, it's not going to be as much of a, hey, line up in the backfield and you're going to run downhill. You're going to run a halfback dive like Debo Samuel can. It's a little bit different, of course, right? Yeah. But I also think that, as we saw early on when Brandon Ayuk was in this doghouse, it helps to have your best players touch the ball a little more, you know. So I think that's just kind of where the creativity and the, you know, the quote unquote, you know, what we call him, the genius of Kyle Shanahan, has to be, I mean, sparked up. I mean, to 11 out of 10, you got to turn the volume up when you don't have a Debo Samuel. And that's kind of just, I think, the honest truth right now.
No, I'm with you 100%, though it would be kind of funny to watch Brandon Ayuk run a halfback dive. And listen, Kyle Juszczyk is going to have a factor. Too. George Kittle's going to have a factor. Like, the offensive line has been really good. I was stunned watching back the game at how well Tom Compton played at right tackle. Like, it's not as if things aren't working, but the tests get tougher as they move forward. And the Seattle team, again, just feels like it's not going to roll over. It feels like their season is on the brink if it's not already done, and they have a lot of pride up there in the Pacific Northwest. Maybe it has all gone to hell, and they can't get it done, but I got to see that on the field before we prove it. Let's talk about a team that doesn't have very many question marks at all, and that's the Golden State Warriors. my goodness, they are very good. Now, full disclosure to everybody listening, we're recording this before the game against the Phoenix Suns have started, so we could sound like real morons here for the next 5 to 10 minutes, but we do appreciate you bearing with us as we are inside the cone of ignorance. And I thought it was interesting, an article that you had up on NBC Sports Bay Area, where the Suns, and specifically JaVale McGee, former Warrior champion JaVale McGee, the belief is that their size, the Phoenix Suns' size, with DeAndre Ayton and McGee, can give the Warriors some trouble. You played it straight. I'm interested in your thoughts. Do you think that that's true? Because if it is, that's a really interesting contrast of styles. And for the two best teams in the NBA right now, feels like it can be a defining factor for this entire league-wide season.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we saw that how well the size of the Suns works, you know, in the playoffs last year and against kind of a quote-unquote small ball Clippers team, and that's when kind of DeAndre Ayton looked kind of like the number one pick that people expected of him, and he was a rebounding machine. And, you know, and JaVale, like you said, he was bringing up even the Nets game that the Suns just had, and JaVale went for 10 and 10 off the bench and everything, used their size. And that, of
course, but the Nets stink.
It's completely true. And I mean, again, if you just look at the actual numbers though, right now, we're going to look at, you know, height on paper, but the Warriors are a better rebounding team. So it'll be interesting. The Warriors have what nobody else has, and that's just called Draymond Green, you know?
Yes. So 100%.
Until I see a giant of a man actually dominate him with his size and everything this season, I'm going to say that fully engaged, fully motivated Draymond Green is going to, you know, be that step above, be that X factor, be the decider between those two. So I think, you know, the Warriors have done a fantastic job of being rebounding the ball collectively and being bigger than they look on paper with kind of this plethora of long wings / big guys, you know, that can kind of play that 3-4, a little bit of that 5 role. And then you even look at a Steph Curry, who's obviously averaging a career high in rebounds before this game. So
it's wild.
It'll be an interesting test for so many reasons, but I do want to see if they try to pound them down low with a DeAndre Ayton, et cetera, and kind of how the Warriors respond to that.
What do you make of the Suns in general? Booker seems to have taken himself to a completely other level over the last couple of months, and what he showed late in the regular season last year and in the playoffs has carried over into this year and perhaps even been augmented to a degree. Chris Paul is still Chris Paul, and love him, hate him in the same game, he's a dude. And I know he's never won a championship, but that guy just has the heart of one. Game-recognized game. I know what championship mentality looks like, and Chris Paul, for all of his whining and complaining, wants it, and that's half the battle. They have some really exceptional role players. It just feels like if the Warriors are the best team in the NBA, they got to beat this team. And if the Suns are the best team in the NBA, they got to beat the Warriors. These feel like worthy adversaries, and this might be the start of something special in terms of a rivalry between two teams that have never really had one of those.
Yeah, you talk about kind of the start of something special, and I mean, I think with the scheduling gods here, where there's almost kind of like this little mini series about to be played out by the Suns. So it'll be interesting to not just see a one-game sample, but kind of this three-game sample, you know? So, again, I think that these are the two best teams in the West, the two best teams in the NBA. And for the Suns to lose that opener and then lose, I think, 3 out of their first 4 and then also go on this 16-game win streak, that shows how good they really are. You know, that last year wasn't a fluke that, okay, sure, we can have our down moments, but we're really, really good. And we've talked obviously about Chris Paul against Steph Curry. We talked about the big men, but I really like the fact that you brought up the role players and things like that, because this is kind of the team that can match up with the Warriors with this multiple kind of wing look with guys like Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson. All those kind of guys are the ones that obviously we have our eyes on for just this game. But those are the guys that, you know, really kind of can win a series and kind of can play out a series and extend a series. So that's kind of why I think that these two teams just match up really well against each other, and it should be fun. And I'm happy that it's not just one game and then see you again in a month or two, that we get to kind of see these teams kind of pick each other apart a little bit and learn from each other game by game.
I'm thrilled as a fan of the sport of basketball that these are the two teams that feel representative of the best of the best, right? Because they're doing it the right way. We can disagree about the Warriors' split action, loving offense with all the cuts versus Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton in the high pick and roll. But my goodness, both of these teams, in my estimation, just play the right way and are bringing it on a night-in, night-out basis, which is not something we see all that often. Though I would argue that maybe the Lakers are trying on a night-in, night-out basis. They just don't have enough to get it done. Yeah. talking to Dalton Johnson of NBC Sports Bay Area, let's swing it over to Giants here real quick. There's not a tremendous amount to talk about when it comes to the San Francisco Giants. Listen, they've done a nice job in filling out the rotation, but they lose Kevin Gausman to the Toronto Blue Jays. There doesn't appear, though you can correct me if I'm wrong here, there doesn't appear to be a big money pitcher coming in to replace a Kevin Gausman, and Mark Canha and a bunch of other guys that seemed like viable options for the Giants to spend some money on. They're gone. They're off the market. Now, there's still some folks out there. Don't get me wrong. A Chris Taylor would look good in black and orange and the like, but the lockout is looming. I don't know how much action is going to happen before the owners close the doors and bring about our baseball nuclear winter. What have you made of just the Giants in general over these last couple of weeks? For a lot of people, it's been very underwhelming. Are you part of that camp?
Yeah, I think things obviously can change so fast, especially with
hopefully they don't change between the time we talk and this and this airs. But exactly. If it does, we'll just cut it out. This never happened.
Perfect. Yes. I'm on board with that. But I think before the lockout, I was hoping to see kind of one of these bigger moves, because it felt honestly fun to see free agency, and MLB free agency hasn't been like this for a little bit as far as just this hurricane of moves happening. And you know, and you want to see the team that you cover, the team that you root for, all these kind of things involved with that, you know? So obviously they made moves that you would somewhat expect with DeSclafani, and it looks like Alex Wood will be coming back, and and Alex Cobb. I mean, Alex Cobb felt just inevitable.
They're good moves.
They're
good moves.
Yeah, they're strong moves. And Alex Cobb is not someone who's going to start 32 games by any means. So to me, right now, it seems more like they're going to have, you know, a mixture of these pitchers, and might sign 6-7 guys to fill out a rotation, just kind of how they have. There's probably going to be that Aaron Sanchez type of deal somewhere with somebody that's going to be like, oh, yeah, like this guy's still pitching, that kind of thing. But, yeah, right? But with an Alex Cobb like that, a move like that I really like, because, again, his numbers are better than they look for that Angels team, obviously. But it would be fun to see, okay, they obviously have what we think is an ace in the making in Logan Webb. Are they going to pair him with someone that is a number two and kind of make that 1-2 like they had with Kevin Gausman? Or is it just going to kind of trust the togetherness that they can make of a pitching rotation? Right now, it kind of feels more like that than the former, but we'll see. Obviously, there's a lot of time.
Was there any disappointment in Gausman leaving, in not getting Mark Canha? Like, what move, when it came across the wire, irked you a little bit more than the others?
I think when you saw the contract of a Gausman, it was okay. But I didn't see them giving him that many years. Probably not that much money.
Is that smart?
Same thing.
Is that like, are you on board with, hey, that's too much money for a guy who has two pitches and gave you about 100 games of really quality pitching and then everything else was kind of like, is that, are you on board with that? Or are you team, hey, pay the man what he's worth and keep this thing together? I don't know if there's a correct camp, but I'm interested in what camp you're in.
I would say number one, as far as contracts go and all that stuff, I'm number one, and this is a little bit veering off of your question. Number one, yeah. go get your money, get whatever you can get. Like, that's fine by me, and I'm never going to be one for, you know, saying, oh, you guys, to a team, you guys gave him too much or anything. Hey, it's not my money, number one.
It goes through a proxy. Yeah, I get you.
But it's like, go out there, get yours, and pay them what you want, whatever. So
okay, yeah.
That's a little veering off. But no, as far as Gausman goes, I mean, as far as being around him, as much as the Giants have, they got so much out of him as far as, you know, that first deal was such a steal. Then he kind of bets on himself with the qualifying offer and turns it into this big deal. So I'm almost thinking, you know, did they kind of see him and see the stretches last year where it wasn't working? And say, okay, off of these two pitches, is this going to last for a 5-year contract at over $100 million? So something like that, where, you know, if they believe that, hey, he even had 2 or 3 more years of a really good number one, number two kind of pitcher, then I say you got to sign him. Like, you saw how close you got last year, go for it. But if that kind of collective group that I think we can trust pretty well right now, it says, hey, I'm not sure how long just this little repertoire is going to go for. He's more of a 1 or 2 year deal kind of guy. And, you know, my thinking right now is that, you know, you kind of have to trust that until we see otherwise. Because right now, the sample size, at least that we have of this group of thinkers with Farhan, et cetera, they've done what they've said they're going to do. And then some, obviously.
I give you access to the Giants wallet. Larry Bear gives me the credit card. I give it to you. You can sign one free agent who's still out there for the market rate, maybe 10% above. Who are you signing who's still available for the San Francisco Giants?
Okay. Let's go one offense, one pitcher.
Beautiful.
I say get Castellanos, just because he's been connected for so long, and I do think that the way he hits works in that ballpark really well, and I'm all for a right-handed power bat in that lineup.
So are they. They would love to have one.
Yeah. And then I say go out and get a Marcus Stroman. I don't think he's going to cost as much of a Robbie Ray, but he's someone that has been pretty durable. I think he's someone that would really like being in San Francisco, and it's someone that's very open to kind of learning from these kind of coaches. He seems kind of hungry for that. He tweeted during the playoffs as far as Logan Webb goes and Gausman and all these guys, and he's someone that I've always been just a fan of as far as his competitiveness goes, and I think that he kind of just plays into this window, and I don't think it's going to be a 7-year contract by any means. So I say go get somebody like that, get a big time bat, and get a number two at least to pair with Logan Webb.
Or go out and sign 10 people for that amount of money. Go the full Oakland Days right now. I'm kidding. I'm with you 100%. I'm with you 100% on that. Listen, they will spend some money. The question is how much. The question is on who. And really the question is when. Because if they don't get it done here in the next couple of hours.
It might be a little while after this. Yeah.
It might be a little bit. It might be a, hey, come on down to spring training, and oh, yeah, here's a contract for you, which is always fun. Just a super blast for everyone who has to preview the baseball season when you have no idea who plays for who beyond the normal level of, wait a minute, he plays for that guy? I know that Dalton Johnson plays for NBC Sports Bay Area, and I know that he's one of our favorites here on KNBR tonight, and my God, man, you brought your A game today. So hopefully NBC is listening and they'll throw you a new contract in the Kevin Gausman range. We always appreciate the time, Dalton. Let's do it again soon.
Always fun. Appreciate it.
Great stuff from our man, Dalton Johnson. Again, one of our favorites here on KNBR tonight. And we bounced around, and now it's your chance to respond. 49ers, Giants, Warriors, how you feeling about anything Dalton said there, anything I said there? I got my licks in. Don't make any mistakes about it. The takes do not take a break for any guest here on KMBR today. 808 KMBR is the number. Dieter Kurtenbach is with you until 10 on the Sports Leader.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.